Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report Look Ahead podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Joining us today are two dear friends, Byron Callen of the independent Washington research firm Capital Alpha Partners, for a look at the week ahead and whatever else is on his mind. And given Boeing's big announcement today, joining us also is Richard Abulafia of the Aerodynamic Advisory and one of the regulars on our business roundtable. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us. Richard, especially so for joining us on such short notice. And before we get started, a word from today's sponsor. HII is one of the largest artificial intelligence and machine learning federal contractors to the U.S. government, HII delivering the advantage. Gentlemen, again, thank you so very much for joining us. We appreciate it. Big news today. Boeing announced that Greg Calhoun is going to step down as CEO at the end of the year. Commercial Airplanes Chief Stan Deal stepped down immediately and was replaced by Boeing Chief Operating Officer Stephanie Pope. Board Chair Larry Kellner won't stand for re-election, and Steve Mullenkopf was elected chair, and he's going to be selecting the new CEO. Richard and Byron, you know, we've all been talking about the need for change at the senior ranks of the company. Nobody more so than you, I think, Richard, loudly and clearly, and you and the entire Business Roundtable team have been talking about this for literally years. What is your first impression? And whether or not this is enough. And the question is, who then succeeds, right? Because there were some questions, for example, about the leadership at BCA and some questions about Stephanie Pope and whether she would be the right person for this job. It appears that the conclusion is yes. Walk us through what all of this means, whether it's going to mollify markets, and Byron, want to get your sense and about next steps.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, this is fantastic news. I mean, it gives us hope. You know, obviously, there are all the details you just mentioned in terms of successor, in terms of, you know, what the new people do. But, oh, my God, things were on such the wrong course that you can't help but feel, you know, thrilled that this change has come, and the breadth of the change. You know, they didn't do it in half measures. They went all the way. It is concerning that Calhoun is sticking around till the end of the year, and it is concerning that we don't know his successor, and it is concerning that they've chosen Stephanie Pope, a finance person, to head Boeing Commercial. But, you know, on the other hand, stability still needed after all of these enormous changes. So perhaps those are all understandable decisions. But my overall reaction is extremely positive this morning.
And we should say, right, she might do a terrific job, and
she might
might do a fantastic job. So I think prejudging it is unfair to her.
Byron, that's exactly right. If I could just add to that, you know, it's just because I think you absolutely do need someone with a technical or engineering background somewhere in the chain. It doesn't mean there's not room for really good finance people, and she might do a terrific job at Boeing Commercial. Absolutely.
Byron, let me get your take, right? You've watched and are kind of a forensic analyst in your own right of corporate, of sort of, you know, going through the corporate wreckage and figuring out what happened and why. What's your sense on this? Is this going to go over well on Wall Street, do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think people, you know, to Richard's point, we've been looking for change for a while. You know, it is curious. I mean, I suppose there was a path here where Calhoun kind of stepped down and Stephanie was elevated to that position, and then they found someone else. But, you know, I've got to believe that the bench is kind of getting fairly thin at Boeing, you know, and so it's an interesting comment that, you know, Steve is going to be looking for the successor CEO. You know, the logical path here would be you buy Spirit AeroSystems and then name Pat Shanahan to be the new CEO. I suppose they could have, you know, patched that all together, but they didn't, at least with this particular announcement. You know, so they kind of left some doors open here. You know, I don't know if Stephanie will be a good or a bad head of commercial airplanes. She certainly knows the business side of this because she has run their services operation. You know, I guess for me, the bigger question is, I don't know, I'm almost indifferent if they go inside or outside. You know, if you think about their last CEOs, you had, you know, Calhoun, McNerney and Stone Cipher, who all came from the outside in effect, although had aerospace experience. But then, you know, Dennis Muhlenberg had kind of risen up through Boeing. Prior to him was Phil Condit, and then Schrantz prior to him. I could go back further in history. So I don't know if the market is particularly looking for, wow, it has to be someone from within Boeing. I think it would be ideal if it's someone who has some aerospace engineering experience. To Richard's point, you know, I don't think you want to get someone, you know, from Zanko, from Cadbury Chocolates to run the company. But, you know, we'll see. I think from a strategic standpoint, from a defense standpoint, you know, the real interesting question is, okay, what kind of restructuring could you see? Richard can comment on this, but I really do think there's logic to have a military aircraft business with your commercial business. But as has been reported, you know, Boeing has been shopping some of its smaller defense electronics operations. You know, does it need to be in the space business, the space satellite business? Does it need to be in the rotary market? If those programs are kind of on a, you know, fairly stable trajectory, you know, but those are decisions that I think will come. And, you know, if I was one of their competitors, I'd be wargaming, you know, what could they sell? What might happen? You know, Boeing's going to be around the commercial airplane business. You know, at some point in the future, the U.S. is going to have to look for larger transport aircraft. They would be one of the logical players in this. You know, as much as some of the special mission aircraft are migrating to smaller platforms or to space, you know, there's still going to be a market for commercial derivatives. The KC-46 is going to be extended because I just don't see where the NGAS program is going on right now. So those are kind of my, you know, off the coffee cup thoughts on Monday morning, Fago.
Yeah, especially as we record this, it's literally, you know, like half an hour since the announcement was made. Let me, Richard, come back to you, right? I mean, is there the possibility, right? I mean, so you mentioned Pat Shanahan, sense that he would have been good for the company, right? A lot of people said that Alan Mulally was the right guy. And unfortunately, Ford benefited from all of his experience, as opposed to the company that he had really devoted most of his career to. You've got Dave Gitlin on the board, highly respected figure. There was a sense that he would play a more prominent role, but in every company, there are mechanics that play out, unfortunately. There's Ted Colbert, whose name is mentioned, the Boeing Defense Security and Space Chief, as you know, somebody who could possibly be elevated. Some people think he would be terrific in the job. Other people think he might be a little bit less so at that, and given the number of challenges that he has on his plate that he's trying to sort out at BCA. Richard, I mean, any, you know, John Slattery is another name. We saw him at GE. He's with GE Aerospace now, and you moderated, Richard, a conversation with him, right? A lot of conversation about whether or not he would be staying at GE Aerospace or moving on. Walk us through what the dynamic and what are some other names that maybe we ought to be thinking about as we look at this?
Yeah, you know, I think it is important to look for a moment at GE and what it experienced and went through, because, of course, between McNerney and Calhoun, a lot of the problems at Boeing have been laid at the feet of old GE culture. And what's fascinating is that GE has been completely transformed, and with people who've said the exact opposite things of what the old culture said.
Larry Culp specifically, in terms Larry of his complete Culp. Re-engineering.
Complete re-engineering. And they went from, you know, the focus is on the share price, nothing more, be ruthless about everything else, to focus on your people, your processes, and making things happen in ways that please your customers. That'll eventually show up in your share price. That's exactly how to do it. And so, you know, boy, it would be great to see John Slattery in a position here somewhere, although at a Boeing commercial would be the logical place for him. So that's a bit complicated by this morning's news. Larry Culp himself would be utterly fantastic. You know, this sort of transformational approach to a very troubled culture has so much resonance here. But, you know, all the other names, you know, Gitlin, the problem, of course, is that he's very, very successful at Carrier. I'm not sure how to get him out of that. And I don't think he'd want to.
money would be kind of one good way of trying to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a well-compensated at Carrier. And Shanahan,
we're not trying to headhunt, are we? We're not. There was no fees involved in this before anybody gets
not whatsoever. But Shanahan would be incredible too.
We're not banking nor representing anybody. Byron, your take?
Bago, I don't have a lot to add. I think Rich really covered the waterfront there.
Let me take you guys to the question of, Boeing is getting ready for labor negotiations with its union. We saw the Spirit deal set what should be the new benchmark for aerospace employees are valued. I've got one more cycle of questions. And then after this, Richard, I promise you, you can go because we barged in on you. And Byron and I can finish the budgetary part of the conversation just to give it the sense. Walk us through what contract negotiations are going to look like. And the union is asking for a seat on the board, which I think both of you have said would be a really good idea. Give us your sense on whether or not there should be a board seat for labor and how you think these contract negotiations are going to go.
Yeah, you know, for some time I've made the point that the connections between management and the people who actually design and build aircraft need to be restored. And that's I still very strongly believe that. But of course, you know, what does that mean? What does that entail? Well, the easiest and simplest way to help with that, I think, would be doing exactly that, giving labor a seat on the board, you know, maybe alternating between SPIA and IAM. I don't know. But either way, that would be one great step in restoring those connections. I would hope that maybe with this change, you know, because remember that Calhoun came from the same great culture that Jim McNerney came from, the whole, let's smash the unions, you know, nothing at all in common with them. Let's just crush them and hope that there are no ramifications whatsoever. You look across the board at labor negotiations in the aerospace industry for the past year or so, and they've all been pretty consistent. Basically, labor is getting 40 to 44% more over 4 years. There's a sort of a glitch in the matrix, and we're seeing all these fours. In an ideal world, that's what would happen. They just say, okay, Spirit AeroSystems, a bunch of airlines, they're all in that 40 to 44% range. You get that too. Let's not be confrontational. Let's not have a strike. Let's be partners here. And let's make other changes, like giving you a seat on the board and anything else. But there's always the risk that either side goes too far.
Byron, your take?
You know, I think the board seat, okay, there's symbolism to that. I think it would matter. I kind of agree with Richard on that. I think the other thing that, look, frankly, whoever the next person is who runs Boeing, the first thing they had to do is shut down the Washington, D.C. office for the corporation and move it back to Washington State. You know, I've often wondered, you know, when Phil Connett moved the headquarters to Chicago, you know, it just put some distance between, you know, what goes on in the factories in the Puget Sound area and what's actually happening at Boeing, you know, as a broader company. So, you know, I think obviously they've got operations elsewhere in the United States, but I think just that symbolism of kind of going back to your roots and being closest to where the bulk of the revenue from the company is being generated would be a very powerful signal. And frankly, you know, that also puts you in contact, not just on the weekdays during work and probably weekends when you're walking around the plant floor, but just you're a broader part of the community there as well, too.
But, you know, the company has been really working in some respects, you could argue, to marginalize the Puget Sound area, right? 747 production is out. You've got, you know, handfuls of 777Xs being made out there. You have the Renton facility and you have 767s. I mean, is it as robust? I mean, is there enough work, Richard, in that factory in Everett, the world's largest industrial facility, to justify it being there? Because the company pulled out its advanced development center. It moved 787 work to the other part of the country. If it could move everything out of the country under the current leadership, you know, out of Washington State, they sort of would, wouldn't they? I mean, has Boeing itself marginalized that community in a way that, you know, I mean, I completely agree with, you know, getting to your roots, but have they been pulling up too much root there ultimately?
Well, you have to look at the Puget Sound area in its entirety. I mean, you know, Renton, of course, is just the highest volume aerospace facility in America,
right,
and second in the world. So that's enormous. And as for Everett, it now has 737 work, 777, 777X. It's, you can't rule out the possibility of some 787 work coming back, although it's not terribly likely. And then most of all, if they do a new jet, I think there's an extremely strong argument for doing it in that area, given the experienced workforce. Yes, its position has been deprioritized, but all of the design work is being done there, or most of it. And a new jet, most importantly, would happen there. So I think there's a very strong argument for moving the HQ back there, exactly as Byron says.
Richard, thanks very much. Have a great week. Break a leg fielding thousands of calls this week. And we'll see you again on Sunday for the Business Roundtable. Thanks so very much for joining us, especially on such short notice.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Byron, we've got about 7 minutes, unfortunately, for the program, and I want to just lead off. Right, you had a lot of thoughtful notes. Your budget note was, it ain't over until it's over, so don't count your chickens. Well, at least we have chickens six months late, but we at least have an appropriations measure. Anything that stood out to you, given that so much nutty stuff happens as we approach
kind of a finish line? Vago, I mean, it is kind of a somewhat happy ending because we did get, appropriations for all six of the different bills. So we kind of avoided that continuing resolution scenario that would have left the open question of the Fiscal Responsibility Act. So at least that part of the budget saga has been closed. But then automatically, we're catapulted into the whole debate over the security supplemental. That's kind of compounded, I suppose, with the announcement that Representative Gallagher from Wisconsin was going to be retiring earlier. So that leaves an even slimmer majority for the House GOP. I don't know how that's going to play out in April for the security supplemental. I mean, I still think we've talked about this a lot. If this was brought to the floor, it would pass. But does Speaker Johnson now feel under more siege because of, the move by Representative Green to, basically attempt to remove him? So I think it's good. The stocks really didn't react much to it, which I think is very appropriate last week. The growth was more or less, I think, baked into consensus expectations in the budget. Although, there's still an open question about, so what do you get? what else would a supplemental mean? And, the debate is automatically swung over to the FY25 budget. And when you see people like Senator Reid, chairman of the House Senate Armed Services Committee, talking about, maybe breaking the caps in FY25. We're seeing, the unfunded supplemental, the unfunded lists being submitted by the services. I mean, look, we have to filter this through the FY25 budget process. But, on the one hand, it looked like the most extreme elements in Congress that wanted deep discretionary cuts were kind of sidelined in this debate. What happens next has to be filtered through the 2024 election.
Just very briefly before we go to the election slog and the week ahead, do you think Moscow, it was ISIS that attacked the theater in Moscow that killed about 140 and wounded another 150, whereas Vladimir Putin and the leadership is blaming it on Ukraine to double down and to crush Ukraine and justify, unprecedented measures, There's you could even cynically observe that Putin has not been above doing this to his own people in order to be able to seize greater control, as we saw earlier in his career. And we're going to have a program about this tomorrow with Dr. Eugene Rumer of the Carnegie Endowment. Do you think the prospect that Ukraine faces a hammering, however unjustly, at the hands of Russia helps sort of sharpen minds in Washington?
I don't think Putin needed that justification to go hammer Ukraine. He was going to do that anyway. I think the bigger issue here, if he's in plausible denial that they've got a Ukraine problem, not an ISIS-K problem, You know, they've got a much bigger issue on their hands. I was reading something this morning that I think, I don't know if this is true, but it's a pretty reputable author who said that one out of every five Russian citizens is Muslim. So that's obviously not a population that's evenly distributed across the country, but you know, they could have a real problem on their hands, an internal security problem on their hands. And ISIS-K, you know, they're not really aligned with anybody. I mean, they kind of hate everyone. So they can strike at Iran, they can strike at Russia, they can strike at the United States. I mean, it's just, you know, it's anarchy in a funny way. So this idea of trying to attribute this to some geopolitical chess game, I think it's just ISIS-K, and you know, they're striking back at someone who, you know, has done them grievous harm through the support of the Assad regime and in Syria, and you know, the closer ties with Iran, I think, is something else that just as well as this, you know, creating or fomenting unrest in Russia, that you know, this is going to impose costs on Russia. They're going to have to spend more on internal security. You know, is that a byproduct that somehow weakens their effort in Ukraine? Does it weaken their hold on states in Central Asia? You know, so there are a lot of imponderables here. The one thing, you know, I don't see this as kind of the false flag thing. There was a lot of that narrative over the weekend. Putin didn't need
Agreed.
it. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that, you know, we all collectively might have a bigger ISIS problem on our hands. They struck Iran. They now are striking Russia, right? And as much as we want to be done with some of this, it would appear that we have to devote an X amount of bandwidth to actually focus on this problem
Absolutely.
because,
That,
unfortunately, it's
yeah,
coming
that
back.
that's our problem too, Vogel. I mean, I've always thought we're an incident away from upending all our security assumptions. You know, China's a pacing threat, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, if that happened in the United States and it turned out to be, you know, five people who came up through Mexico, you know, can you imagine the ramifications of what that would mean? So, look, I'm not saying anything unique that your audience doesn't know. We live in a dangerous world, and but I think the point is to not get so glued into one or two prime scenarios that you just lose sight of what these other risks are. And you've got to have a very balanced security portfolio in thinking about addressing, you know, these threats that can pop up in dramatic and horrible ways.
We will talk at greater length about some budgetary specifics because I feel like we spend billions of dollars on some things that never go anywhere, whether they're FARA or any other programs. But we'll save that for next week because your time is short. Great note, long election slog, defense and the upcoming election. Your thoughts, then want to get your sense on HII and then the week ahead. Go ahead on the election.
Look, Vago, I mean, I just, you know, I think if people believe that, you know, Republican victory in November is going to open the floodgates for more defense dollars, I would think very differently about that. And, you know, what I talked a little bit about was the House budget resolution that has to pass the House Budget Committee. You know, Republicans are looking for lower defense spending in the out years than the Biden administration. So, you know, there's this old saw in Wall Street that defense stocks tend to do well in presidential election years. You know, I think we're just in a very different political environment, and you really need to look not necessarily what history shows you, but what could happen or what's playing out today as we speak.
Quickly give us your sense on the HII Investor Day and takeaways, and then give us the week ahead.
You know, the central message was, look, we're a balanced company. We are not just about ships. You know, Mission Technologies is a somewhat difficult business to explain, but you know, they're pretty confident in their ability to grow sales and see some higher operating margin. The chip portfolio looks pretty stable, and the optionality is really going to be Mission Technologies and how they can grow that. Week ahead, you know, there's an Army AUSA show in Huntsville, Alabama this week that ought to generate some news on just kind of the Army take on the FY25 budget. You know, what do they see? What did they really see out of FY24 program status? How are they thinking about the world there are a couple of think tank events on, you know, once again, kind of what's going on in the Middle East. And I believe someone from DARPA is going to be speaking at CSIS on AI. That ought to be interesting.
Byron, thank you so much, as always. Really appreciate it. Hope you have a terrific week and look forward to having you back on again next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bago. Bye.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Tune in again tomorrow for our program with Dr. Eugene Rumer of the Carnegie Endowment, talking about what's next from Moscow in the wake of the ISIS-K terror attack that killed more than 140 people and wounded 150. A quick word from our sponsors. The Defense and Aerospace Report and its family of publications is brought to you by HII, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, GE Aerospace, Bell, Leonardo DRS, American Rheinmetall, and TE Connectivity. Thanks very much again for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll see you again tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.